And you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, my name is Tom Strange, and with me as always are some of my best friends, and we are the Long Box guys. Mike, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I am doing excellent. I am drinking a Heroes Premium beer. Spelled B-I-E-R, because it is coming to us courtesy of one of the Long Box Legion who brought it back from Frankfurt, Germany, from a bar called Heroes Premium Burgers, and it is very tasty. And I'm also riding on a high today because I spent the weekend binge reading Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, and I have to say thank you to Robert Vendetti and artist Rafael Sandoval for creating one of my favorite new characters in the Green Lantern mythos, Prince Lorax, also known as Space Ape.
Well, we knew it had to be an ape, you idiot. Josh, nothing how you wrong. Doing? What are you drinking? Nothing wrong with a new ape. I get you.
That's right. Every ape is a welcome addition to the world of apes. I am just below average today, but I am drinking Crispin, their classic English dry cider, which is quite delicious. It's cheering me up as I go along. I'm sure I'll be more cheerful for later in the podcast.
Do you remember the Battle Royal of St. Crispin's Day that we had? It's true, we had that. No one got the joke by me and you, but we still had that Battle Royal.
It's true.
All the other wrestlers were like, it's just a Battle Royal, right? Like, well, kind of. Like, all right. Tommy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I am doing just okay, and I am drinking Knob Creek Single Barrel Reserve, because that's the type of day.
So you're sucking on your knob.
Stepping it up a notch.
Sucking on your knob.
I needed my knob to be extra strong tonight.
And it should be extra strong tonight, because we four are going to be talking about four enemies. Not our four enemies, but the Fantastic Four enemies. Yeah, there's a segue for you. The Fantastic Four are a great team with some really good villains that we can delve into and talk about. Mikey, why don't you tell us about your favorite Fantastic Four villain?
All right, well, in order to set the stage, let's go back to 1956. The Soviet Union launches Sputnik, and suddenly America's greatest enemy has pulled ahead of them in the space race. With that in mind, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby are looking to create a team of superheroes, and they pull from the 1960s zeitgeist and make the Challengers of the Unknown. No, wait. The Fantastic Four. Reed Richards, also known as Mr. Fantastic, is so obsessed with beating the commies into space, he endangers the lives of his best friends in order to win. They launch into space and get bombarded with cosmic rays, and the age of Marvel superheroes is born. Aunt Petunia's favorite baby boy, Ben Grimm, becomes the monstrous thing. Sue Storm becomes the invisible girl slash woman. And for some reason, I guess they couldn't find a babysitter, they took Sue's teenage brother into space with them, and Johnny Storm becomes the second Human Torch. But what good is the Fantastic Four without villains? And I've got the best one. Ivan Kragov first appeared in Fantastic Four number 13 in 1963, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Now, it makes sense if you're going to have a story about the space race between the U.S. and the Soviet Union that you got to introduce the Soviet counterparts to the Fantastic Four. Ivan Kragov is a brilliant scientist who realizes that exposure to cosmic rays can give him and the rest of his crew superpowers. So his ship gets bombarded and things go entirely to his plans. He gains the ability to become intangible and goes by the moniker the Red Ghost. But here's the best part. Who did the Red Ghost take into space with him, LT?
He took a monkey!
No. He took apes.
He took an ape.
He took three apes. He took Mikilo the gorilla, Petar the orangutan, and Igor the baboon. These apes not only become super intelligent, they get superpowers. The gorilla gets super strength. The orangutan gets control over gravity or magnetism, depending on who's the writer. And Igor, the baboon, can transform into almost anything. And the Red Ghost and the Super Soviet Apes fight not only the Fantastic Four, mostly for control of the moon, but they also end up becoming Marvel supervillains for everybody. They fight the Defender, Spider-Man, Quasar, She-Hulk. They also fought Iron Man, and that was my first encounter with the Red Ghost back in 1976. But my favorite story, if you're going to go out there and read anything, go check out X-Men number 176 from 2005, in which the Red Ghost and his super apes try to form the new Socialist Simian Republic of Naganda. It is a fabulous episode, mainly because at one point, Mikalo, the gorilla, tells the Red Ghost that his tears run like the Volga River. And the Red Ghost says, shut up, you don't have a soul, nobody has a soul. And if I have to, I'll send you back to Russia to get re-indoctrinated in the proper Soviet techniques. And Mikalo says, bah, the Marxist school is gone. It is now a Nike shoe store. It's right next to the Taco Bell. My favorite line by any gorilla in a Marvel comic. And that's saying something, folks. That's saying something.
I'm glad you qualified that, Mike.
Yeah, in a Marvel comic.
Well, like when I went over to Prague with my wife, we were looking for the Communist Museum, and the guidebook told us it's between the casino and the McDonald's. They had to be more specific because there were like four casinos and McDonald's right next to each other. LT, who do you got?
Well, Mike, since you started out with the Red Ghost, I'm going to start out with Reed Richards, because there's no better way to impress a girl than to bring her up in space and horribly disfigure her for life. And you might as well disfigure her family members, too. That's right. Why bother putting in some high-quality radiation shielding into your spaceship when you can give superpowers and disfigurement to everybody aboard? That's right. Reed Richards. He spends the rest of his days trying to fix Ben Grimm, who's horribly, horribly disfigured. Because what better way to treat your best friend than to make him an outcast and make him feel bad for the rest of his days? Poor Ben Grimm just wants to look normal, even though he's the ever-loving thing. He gets picked on by the Yancy gang for the rest of his days because of the way he looks. Johnny Storm, always known as a hothead, then becomes a hothead because of his little space journey. Sue Storm probably comes out the best because she gets to actually control her powers and she can become totally invisible. Stretch, well, he's Reed Richards. He's always thinking about himself. But Reed Richards, I think by far the worst villain of the Fantastic Four, because he brought everybody onto that spaceship, didn't think of the consequences. Even the Russians knew to send apes first.
Wait a second. Are you implying that apes are more expendable than humans? You, sir, have drawn my ire.
I'm just saying that the apes didn't have a choice. Richards didn't explain to everybody the dangers of going into space. He was just like, hey, let's go on a road trip.
You know what? Actually, Reed Richards did know about the dangers of the cosmic rays. He just thought it would give them superpowers.
Yeah.
He just never told anybody that until the
original
story. He just
never told anybody shit. He didn't tell anybody shit. He just decided to do it. And he's supposedly the brightest guy on the Earth and possibly one of the brightest people in the universe, and yet he still can't fix Ben Grimm after years and years of trying.
I'll agree that he's villainous in a lot of ways, but the best villain, I disagree, sir, because I'm going to have to go with the Invisible Girl as the worst villain of the Fantastic Four, only when she became Malice. Everyone remember Malice?
I did not see that coming. I did not see that coming.
No.
Did you like that?
That came out of nowhere.
Malice was the negative aspect of the Invisible Woman's own personality. When Psycho Man attacked her and made her, you know, very emotional, she drew upon some of the negative energy that she'd been feeling for a long time. She was able to create new and more deadly powers, creating explosions, deadly force fields with spikes in it. She really kind of awakened as a real powerhouse as Malice, the Mistress of Hate. And she attacked the Fantastic Four. Now, there were some lasting effects of Sue Richards becoming Malice, and the most important one is she went from being Invisible Girl to becoming the Invisible Woman when she regained her control over her body. So while Malice was in control, she had a much sexier outfit, which was really, really cool, and she had more crazy great powers. Sue Richards, when she got control back, was able to use these powers a little bit better, but she was always a little worried that Malice was still lurking inside her. A couple other times Malice would reappear, but it was that first run as Malice that I think was the most important and really, really cool to see Malice, the Mistress of Hate. Josh, how about you? What do you got for us?
My first choice, and it's hard to decide if he's more a villain of the Fantastic Four or Marvel continuity. I'm going with Kang the Conqueror. Kang the Conqueror, our friendly neighborhood time traveler, often confronts the Fantastic Four, but more often, he just screws with Marvel's continuity. So he's a scientist from the 30th century who, through research, because nobody in the 30th century has invented time travel, but he goes back into history books and finds out that Doom created time travel, recreates it, and then starts time-bouncing all over the place, causing heck and havoc for all involved. And eventually goes up to the 40th century, where he uses Doom's old plans to make armor and makes himself a supersuit, because everyone needs a decent supersuit. Where's my supersuit? And and then basically just bounces around where the Fantastic Four have to chase him around timelines, and even messes with the good old X-Men timeline at one point, going back in time to become a pharaoh, hoping to, like, adopt Saban-Nur, who becomes Apocalypse, which, you know, just another fantastically ridiculous time-traveling hijinks by Kang the Conqueror.
It's strange that you pick Kang, because I know how much you hate bad time travel stories.
I'm saying he's the best villain for them.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Because he's evil.
Yeah. He's evil, and he screws up time all the time. Yeah.
And doesn't Kang become Immortus?
Is he Immortus? I can't remember. He's got a bunch of different names.
One of his time selves becomes Immortus. Because time travel.
Oh, Kang.
Because, you know, time travel. I always thought he was the most ridiculous villain.
He is.
But I hate all the time travel stuff.
I do, too. But that's why he's the greatest villain.
It's true. He is, like you say, probably one of the greatest villains in Marveldom. He destroys good stories.
Well, if you hate time travel, you're going to hate my next villain. And I am talking about the Skrulls. First appearing in Fantastic Four, number 2, 1962, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Remember, the whole point of the Fantastic Four was it was the U.S. versus the Soviet in the space race. And the Skrulls represent the Soviet Union because they had spies who could be anywhere in the United States. And it was perfect because the Skrulls are green guys, but they're able to shapeshift so they can look like anybody they want. It's the perfect image of the fear of the Soviet menace, who could be anybody, anywhere, even your own neighbor. The Skrulls set about a diabolical plan back in Fantastic Four number 2 to frame the Fantastic Four to looking like bad guys. But they are defeated, and Reed Richards comes up with a brilliant idea to hypnotize them and turn them into cows. That's right. He turns them into cows, and this is not the last we hear about the Skrull cows, because there is a whole rich history, including people getting superpowers from eating the Skrull cow burgers and from drinking the Skrull milk. It's a whole fascinating storyline, but I'm going to give you guys a theory here, because in Fantastic Four, Volume 4, Issue Number 10, the Fantastic Four travel back to the founding of the country. And during the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson is arguing that they should do away with slavery. But Ben Franklin, who is actually a Skrull in disguise, argues that it would break apart the Union before they even have a chance. And the reason he's doing it is because he wants humans to be willing to accept slavery, so that way when the Skrulls come back in several hundred years, they can capture them more easily and make them slaves, because slavery will be part of the culture. However, again, the Fantastic Four stop them. And Reed Richards goes back to his old trick and turns them into cows. So the cows, Skrulls from 1776, then start breeding with all the non-Skrull cows, creating Skrull hybrid cows all over the United States. And all the U.S. people who eat these steaks and drink this Skrull cow hybrid milk, eventually mutations start to happen. That's right. The X-Men are the direct result, and this is just my theory, of the Skrull cows.
And discuss. You can say that's just a theory.
It's just a theory, but...
So I'm going back to my first comment on the Fantastic Four. Reed Richards, horrible villain. If this isn't a diabolical plot, what is? He's destroying the Earth by interbreeding it with Skrulls.
Well, he's destroying the bovine population by interbreeding it with Skrulls.
Well, but also the collateral damage, all the different animals that are eating the bovines. I mean, the wolves that are eating the cattle, the humans that are slaughtering the cattle and eating them. I mean,
forget about that. Think about all these cows out there who have the ability to shapeshift. They just don't have the imagination to do it. It's sad.
My real concern here.
It is sad. But on the flip side, they just really like the taste of grass.
The fact that Marvel hasn't capitalized on this and I can't go buy Skrull milk at my local 7-Eleven is a shame, by the way.
It's true. Shame. They should be like partnering with like some, you know, maybe McDonald's have like a Skrull Shamrock Shake on St. Patrick's Day. You know, they should really, really be investing in and trying to get some marketing going on.
If you're listening, Marvel, that one's free. It's on me.
So my next one is going back to the beginning, Fantastic Four number one, Mole Man, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, Harvey Rupert Elder, Mole Man, ruler of the Moloids. He was an explorer, an atomic scientist. He was kind of an ugly looking guy. Always portrayed as kind of a homely guy, kind of an outsider. He was exploring the underworld. He thought that the Earth might be hollow and was kind of an outcast because of his bizarre theories. He was exploring the underworld and kind of got lost. He got distracted by some shiny diamonds, lost part of his vision, and ended up living in the underground world and becoming the ruler of the Moloids, and then decided to take over the surface world again, and well, the rest is just history. And he's been a constant villain to the Fantastic Four. He's fought the Avengers. He's fought all sorts of different groups in the Marvel Universe.
That's a pretty good villain. And one draw threat, not just to the Fantastic Four, but more importantly, to Sue Richards and Reed Richards' marriage. And of course, I'm talking about Prince Namor. Now, Prince Namor has been a villain in every sense of the word. He's, attacked the surface world. He's also been an ally. But let's never forget that Namor really, really wants to break up this marriage. He does a lot of things to get Sue Richards over, including just kind of pretending to be like the friendly undersea merman kind of guy that kind of just kind of wiggles his way into the marriage. Like, oh, no, I'll team up. Sure, fantastic. Bye, let's do this. But the entire time, he's undermining Reed and trying to get in that marriage. Prince Namor, you're a dick, and I'm calling you out for it.
I'm going to go with the Impossible Man. Impossible Man is a ridiculous shape-shifting alien who I best know from his legendary shape-shifting showdown with Warlock of the New Mutants. But he does keep showing up all through the 70s, mostly as a guy who helps out Molecule Man and Claw. Now, he's kind of like the who's the green guy from the Flintstones?
Greg Kazoo.
He kind of reminds me of the Kazoo, where he tries to be kind of serious at some point, but really, he's just so ridiculous, nobody really takes him seriously, even the readers. But I do like the whole shapeshifting is like one of my favorite powers, so I got to go and stick out and give some props to the Impossible Man. He also has a legendary sound effect that goes with him. Like Wolverine snicked, he has the pop.
Pop!
Yep.
And sound effect, I'll give you that.
Yeah, all right. Got a good sound effect.
Mikey, who do you got next?
I have Annihilus, the ruler of the Negative Zone, first appearing in Fantastic Four Annual number 6 back in 1968, created, of course, by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. He is the bug-like ruler of the Negative Zone who controls everything with an exoskeleton suit, which is actually really just his exoskeleton with some technology thrown into it. And he has the cosmic control rod, which allows him to manipulate cosmic energy. And that is what he uses to dominate the Negative Zone and make all the people follow him. His best appearance, in my humble opinion, is when Johnny Storm has captured the cosmic control rod and is holding Annihilus as his hostage in the apartment he shares with Peter Parker. So if you get a chance to check out those issues, well worth it. But Annihilus is my favorite Negative Zone villain. I don't care what you guys say, Blastar sucks.
Wow. Yeah. Kind of harsh.
Well,
yeah.
Kind of very anti-Blastar in the room all of a sudden.
Yeah.
We're going to get a lot of Blastar fan mail saying that's that right. We're wrong on this one. So I just want to go on the record saying that every single Longbox guy opinion is linked exactly to Mike's on this one. I always kind of like Blastar, so
we're going to
Blastar's battalion,
the Negative Zone, and we're going to make Blastar pay for it.
All of Blastar's battalions of fans can come at me, bro.
Strong words. Strong words indeed, sir. Tommy, who do you got next?
Whatever happened to making Blastar great again? My next one is going to be Paste Pot Pete. He's a member of the Frightful Four, also known as the Trapster. He first appeared in Strange Tales number 104 in 1963. And then he later appeared as the Trapster in Fantastic Four 38. His name is Peter Petrusky. He is a character that we've often said would be better off just going into corporate America and selling his wares. He has super solvents and also super glues, basically, that allow him to do his criminaling, and he's been a villain of the Fantastic Four, and he likes to glue stuff together, stick stuff together, and try to steal stuff, and he has super solvents to get himself out of sticky situations. And he probably could have made billions selling his super adhesives and his super solvents. Instead, he has turned to a life of crime.
I like the fact that he has all the powers of a can of super glue.
It's true. He has all of them. And often he carries them in a very sloppy manner.
I blame society for turning Pastepot Pete. He was probably a nice kid, probably messing around in chemistry lab, and some jock douchebag named, I don't know, like Scaramucci or something, probably influenced him to, you know, cheat on a test, and it all went downhill from there. Team Pastepot.
Yeah, I'm on. I'm on board. I'm in.
Thank you for the confidence on this one. I think Pastepot Pete can be reformed.
Society gone wrong.
Hey, Pastepot.
Hey, Pastepot. You want to eat some paste?
Leave me alone. I don't need paste. You eat paste. Speaking of alliteration when it comes to supervillain groups, mine was kind of a short-lived one, but I had all the comic books when I was younger, and I really liked the run, and that was the run of Salem's Seven. Mike, you're a bigger Fantastic Four than I am. Oh, really?
Oh,
I was going to say none of you guys like the Salem's Seven. Go ahead. Tell me why, Josh.
I will tell you why. So I find it odd that the Fantastic Four – so basically the most science-based team in the Marvel Universe, right? I mean, you know, he's basically a genius. He invents everything. He gets out of everything with science. But for some reason, the Fantastic Four face a bevy of magical foes, probably more so than any other team. They've got Salem Seven, Nick Scratch, Mephisto is always – nipping around at the Fantastic Four's heels for reasons unknown. It just seems it's such an odd, like, step out from what you'd think they would make their villains be.
I was going to say you could also add Doctor Doom to that list of supernatural villains, but go ahead, explain to everybody who the Salem Seven are.
The Salem Seven are the superpower group formed by Nicholas Scratch. Now, Nicholas Scratch is the grandchild of Agatha Harkness. Agatha Harkness was one of the original witches in Salem. Agatha Harkness, a very powerful witch, mostly a force of good. Of course, everyone gets possessed at some point in the Marvel Universe, so there have been a couple runs when Agatha has been at odds with superheroes. Agatha Harkness, oddly enough, was one of the babysitters for the Richards family. The Salem Seven kind of comes about as a way of getting back at the Fantastic Four for thought-of slights by Nicholas Scratch. And some of the members of the team have really cool powers. Bruticus can transform into this big lion thing, almost as strong as the Thing or the Vision. Gazelle, one of my favorite ones, is kind of transforms into a gazelle-like deer person. Hydron looked kind of stupid. He was a merman, but he had the stumpy arm that shot water, and you could kind of control the armor, the water. Thorn threw thorns. Vacuum was really cool to me. He was this purple humanoid kind of thing who could control air and create vacuums. A great nemesis for the Human Torch, who really can't survive in a vacuum very long. And there was also Vertigo. She had the power of, like, the original Count Vertigo of being able to, you know, affect a person's ability to balance or make sense of, you know, balance if they just fall over. There have been a couple of different iterations, especially in the Ultimate Marvel Universe and a couple others, but that original team was really cool. And it's still a lot of fun to watch because the Fantastic Four just had trouble with magic. So if they're magic people attacking the Fantastic Four, I was always all in because, take that, Reed Richards. You don't know what to do with Reptilia. She's a girl with snake arms. Fight that. Jerk.
Yeah, fight that with science.
Yeah.
Not so tough when a girl with snake arms has you by the throat, are you? Dink.
Yeah, all you need is some sort of Hawk Woman.
Hawk Woman against Reptilia would be hilarious and short-lived.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Or you know who else you could use? You know who else could have been really helpful? Mongoose.
Tommy.
Aardvark and Mongoose. Let's get these in here.
And Grizzly.
Mongoose, is the Grizzly the natural enemy of pythons?
Yes.
I would watch that Sci-Fi Channel movie, Grizzly versus Python. Versus Sharknado.
Super Grizzly. Oh, yeah.
Versus Octo Reptilia. All right. I think that was all the big ones. Why don't we go over some of our honorable mentions? Mike, name off a couple honorable mentions for us.
Well, we didn't mention Doctor Doom, and I understand why. Although he's been viewed as the biggest Marvel villain there is, he's actually not a villain anymore. He is currently a hero fighting alongside the Avengers, and he is in conflict with the Maker. The Maker, by the way, is the evil Ultimate Universe version of Reed Richards. So, again, that's who I thought you were originally talking about, LT. And nobody else mentioned Molecule Man, who, again, he's kind of not a villain anymore, Owen Reese. He's awesome. And then I'm surprised nobody talked about Galactus.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Galactus.
Yeah.
But Tom cut us short.
Well, talk about Galactus, LT.
Well, I mean, Galactus, he was
That's
first
enough.
Introduced.
Done.
Alrighty.
Wasn't that giant cloud thing from the movie? Is that what you're talking about?
That's right, yeah. If you don't know who Galactus is, read a book!
You know, as Neil Adams has said, if there's going to be one Fantastic Four movie, it's got to be the Fantastic Four versus Galactus. But didn't they already have that movie?
If there's going to be a Fantastic Four movie ever, since there's never been one.
Yeah.
I don't know who they would pick as the first villain, really. Galactus is, if you're going to do a trilogy, Galactus is clearly film number three, right? And if you're going with Galactus for film number three, then you got to run up to it with Heralds of Galactus.
Galactus. The Silver Surfer.
Yeah. He'd look good
Fire
on the screen.
Terax.
Firelord, of course.
Yeah.
Firelord should be this. Firelord should be the secondary villain in the second movie.
Yeah. Definitely.
He's no Airwalker.
Definitely, yeah. No Dazzler.
And,
that's for damn sure.
And Dazzler should come and kick his ass.
I would watch that movie.
I would watch that movie.
Yeah, if only they, you know, if somebody just buckled down and made a Fantastic Four movie. It seems odd that they've skipped them entirely in the Marvel Universe, but, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
Okay, it'll come around. Yeah, it'll happen eventually.
It'll happen. It'll happen eventually.
Are you guys totally missing the Corman Fantastic Four movie? Roger Corman? Pretending that one didn't happen, too?
We're pretending they all didn't happen.
There's actually a great documentary.
We're pretending they all didn't happen until there's a good one.
There's actually a great documentary called Doomed, and it's about the making of Roger Corman's version of the Fantastic Four. The reason that movie was made in the first place was because they were going to lose the right to make the movie if they didn't do something. So they let Roger Corman make a really slipshod Fantastic Four movie. So if you get a chance, watching the actual Fantastic Four Roger Corman movie isn't that satisfying. But Doomed is pretty good. So maybe we should have the Marvel Cinematic Universe as one of the enemies of the Fantastic Four.
Seriously. Hollywood Fox writers, pictures. The worst enemy of the Fantastic Four. Fox pictures.
What if we made... Fox pictures. What if we didn't make them brother and sister anymore?
What if we made them a team of ninjas instead? Turtles.
And then can they be turtles?
It's true. Yeah.
Oh, maybe they made this movie and just didn't notice it. Four turtles, Fantastic Four, hey.
Yeah, they just missed it completely.
They were just way outside the box.
Well, like I said, I do like Mephisto and his whole tampering, his whole trying to get the souls of the Fantastic Four. Because apparently the souls of the Fantastic Four are worth much more than other people's souls because Mephisto is obsessed. Who else do I really like on that list, though? Mike already mentioned, and I'm going to circle back to Mike's choice just for a second, though, only because Annihilus and mine, Kang the Destroyer, for some reason, basically have matching outfits, but you never see them together at the same time. So I don't know if they're actually two separate people. Yeah, I think that's it. I think I'm good. I'm good.
All right. I just want to mention a couple that I always liked. Salamandra. Salamandra is the ex-wife of the Wizard. That's Betty Whitman. And it's one of the few times ever that an ex-wife fights to get her husband back that happens to be a supervillain. I thought Salamandra was hilarious every time she comes around.
Her kid Charmander is also really good. And sometimes I do choose Salamandra.
When Charmander grows up, though, he's actually quite formidable.
I bet he will be. Yeah.
I also really like the Puppet Master. I thought Puppet Master was great every time I saw him on a comic book cover. I thought he was kind of cool. That's about it for me. I wasn't a huge Fantastic Four fan, but I did have a couple runs, especially like.
I can't believe you didn't choose the Mad Thinker and his awesome android.
See, now I never thought of the Thinker as a villain ever.
Really?
No, I've always wanted him to win.
Okay. Gotcha. It makes sense now.
Yeah. How can you call him a villain?
We know why Mike likes the robot, the android. Awesome
Andy?
Android. We know why you like him, Mike. Do you know why you like him so much?
Because he's awesome and an android?
No, because he's the combination of Mr. Fantastic's DNA, unstable molecules, and ape DNA.
Ooh.
What?
Technically, an ape.
I did not know that.
Awesome android, technically part ape.
Oh, now I got to get all those comic books,
too? It's
all
making sense now.
I had no idea. I am aghast that I didn't know that one.
I'm aghast Mike didn't know that one.
That is terrible.
Add it to the ape list, Mike.
Ooh, I didn't know the Mad Thinker made Quasimodo. I like that one.
Oh, I'd like Quasimodo.
Quasimodo was cool. That was a good one. Mikey, do you have anything at the front of the long box for me?
Yes, I do. Before I get into what I'm going to be reviewing, I want to give people a heads up because one of the best writers in comics, Tom King, is about to have a new series, and I want to give you guys a chance to go tell the guys at the local comic book store to put it in your pull list, and that is Mr. Miracle. It is going to be awesome. It's written by Tom King, and at Comic-Con just recently, they announced that Jeff Lemire is leaving Marvel Comics after his fantastic run on Moon Knight and is going to be writing two comics for DC. One is going to be a Hawkman comic, and the other is called The Terrifics. So I think Mr. Terrific might be getting a Mrs. Terrific.
Oh.
Ooh.
What I'm going to recommend for you guys today is Dark Days, The Casting. This is the sequel to The Forge, which I talked about previously. It's by DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, that is continuing off of his run on Batman in the New 52. It all starts, there are clues that he was laying down in those 52 comics that he wrote to build up to this series. It's a mystery about Hawkman's origins and the ninth metal, which is supposedly extremely very powerful. So powerful, in fact, that Hawkman doesn't even know his own origin and is trying to uncover it. If you guys want to read it, the first reader who enters this code over at dccomics.com/redeem will get a digital copy of the comic. It is Delta Charlie 717-3 Yankee Whiskey 8737 Mike. So there you go. The first long box Legionnaire to go to dccomics.com/redeem, you will get a free digital copy of it.
I have a quick question on this. You said ninth metal. I always thought it was nth metal.
I always thought it was nth too, but
originally it was ninth metal, but then it was changed to nth metal later on. And that's actually part of DC's history of it. They have a whole thing with the immortals like Ra's al Ghul and Vandal Savage and Shazam are all getting together doing a ceremony, which Hawkman interrupts. It's actually a very cool storyline. The Joker is back in this story, as well as you get to find out some different iterations of Hawkman. Like, for example, he was Black Hawk during World War II. He was one of the challengers of the leader of the Challengers of the Unknown with Shara back in the 1960s. They start recounting all these different lives that Hawkman has lived by basing it on old DC Comics characters. It's very cool.
That really does sound cool. Maybe I'm going to grab that one. Cool.
Yeah, I know LT will like it because he loves – he's probably the biggest Hawkman fan I know.
Definitely the biggest Hawkman fan I know. But what do you got at the back of the long box for us there, Tommy?
Well, I am really not going back far at all. I am going to recommend The Unworthy Thor. And this actually just came out in the collected edition a few months ago. It came out in May of 2017, and it collects Unworthy Thor 1 through 5, and it is a story of Thor, who became unworthy to carry Mjolnir. He hears about another version of Mjolnir fallen, and he decides to go after it. And so he rides his trusty goat to Asgard, and finds that Asgard is no longer there, and begins a journey to find Asgard, and gets captured by the Collector, who has taken Asgard. And it's a fantastic story where Thor is fighting the Collector and the Collector's minions, all in the effort to find this fallen hammer, and to claim it for his own. He meets up with Beta Ray Bill. It's a really well-written and well-drawn series, and I recommend it to everyone. It's got Thor's flying goat. Who knew Thor had a flying goat?
Pretty much everyone who's read Norse mythology.
Yeah.
But, you know, other than that.
I'm going to concur with LT about The Unworthy Thor being a great book. Jason Aaron has been killing it over at Marvel. He's been doing The Unworthy Thor. He did Darth Vader for a while. He was doing a great job on Doctor Strange. And he's been knocking it out of the park with The Mighty Thor. So Unworthy Thor is great. And Jason Aaron is one of the best Thor writers there's been since Walt Simonson.
I'm sorry, I can no longer contribute. I am too busy looking at a picture of Thor and his goat. There are way more pictures.
You can masturbate later. Let's get through this podcast.
Marvel. All right, let's get through this. today, I want to talk a little bit on the social justice part of this podcast, a little bit about Make Mine Milkshake. Does everyone know about the Make Mine Milkshake hashtag?
I don't. Does it involve bringing your milkshake down to the yard?
Well, it does bring all the boys to the yard, but it's more about a writer and editor over at Marvel Comics named Heather Antos. Heather Antos was audacious enough to post a selfie of her and some of her friends drinking a milkshake. And she was immediately attacked by troll boys on the internet saying she wasn't a real nerd girl. None of them were real nerds, and just attacking them for everything, from being in a comic book shop to posing with comic books to having milkshakes from not being back at work. The internet is made of garbage people, and the garbage people attacked Heather Antos for a perfectly cute little photo of her and her friends drinking a milkshake. So the hashtag MakeMyMilkshake appeared. Go to Twitter, do the hashtag MakeMyMilkshake, look at all the people in support of women in comic books, and take a good long look and thought about how women are attacked for the stupidest of reasons when it comes to being in a male-dominated field like comic books. Heather Antos, you have the long box, guys, full support, and I will be posting me drinking a milkshake in your honor this week. I'm sorry, yeah. was that too tangential? Because that's not my purview. That's Josh's.
Josh, no, I'm going to ride the wave. Yeah, ooh. I'm going to ride the wave and say favorite milkshake, generally just flavor, and then favorite place to get a milkshake, go.
Mine gets very specific. I love the Shamrock Shake. If any of you say it's not really mint flavored, you can go and fuck yourselves. I have an app. I have an app when I live down south to help me find Shamrock Shakes because very few McDonald's had them. So you followed the app. The closest Shamrock Shake was 45 miles away. I had to drive to this little McDonald's out in the middle of nowhere to get my Shamrock Shake when I lived in Memphis. But it was totally worth it. Love Shamrock Shakes.
I will not argue that it's not mint, but I will argue that it's not milk.
It might not
I was going to say it wasn't shake, but I guess it's the same thing.
So for me, I'm going to choose a black raspberry milkshake from Friendly's Ice Cream. That's what I used to drink when I worked there, and it was delicious.
Oh, those were delicious.
Friendly's is a dwindling franchise, but I'm glad there is one near me.
Now, tell me if I'm wrong, LT, will a milkshake immediately kill you?
It will not immediately kill me, but they're not very good over time. Having lots of them over time is not a good thing.
All right. I just want to make sure. Oh, wait. Is an Orange Julius in this mix?
I don't know if I'd call that a milkshake. I mean, don't get me wrong. Milkshake. I love me an Orange Julius. But not a milkshake.
So a daiquiri thank isn't God a milkshake Dairy... either.
No. Thank God Dairy Queen bought them. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist anymore either.
I know. I've come up with my own recipe over the years for a nice Orange Julius at home. But it's still not quite as good. Is that damn Orange Julius? Those are damn things.
Just gotta go to DQ.
Was that everybody? Did everyone?
Well,
no, I'm a coffee milkshake man myself, and recently I had one from Shake Shack, and I have to say, good shake. Nice job, guys.
I like the peanut butter chocolate shake from Sonic.
Where's there a Sonic? Is there a Sonic near us? Am I missing?
There's a couple in Connecticut, and there's also one in Woburn.
Well, there's a Sonic in Woburn?
Yep.
Really?
Really?
Is there a road trip in our future?
I did not know they've made it to Massachusetts. Yeah.
They have.
Christina has not been to a Sonic yet, and she does love hot dogs. And if you want a hot dog from a fast food place, Sonic is the place to do it.
Well, next time you guys are down in New Orleans, we will go to Atomic Burger because they do incredible milkshakes, and they use dry ice to make it.
Oh. Ooh. Intriguing.
That sounds dangerous. Fancy. Well, LT, I heard that we might have some letters this week. Do we have a letter this week?
We do have a letter this week. Dear Longbox guys, first off, I would like to say your talk on Batman villains was well done and very enjoyable. I am always amazed at the diversity of characters and storylines that are addressed. Secondly, I recently attended my first Comic-Con in Worcester. I had many moments of feeling out of my element and not knowing what was acceptable protocol, such as, can you ask an artist to sign prints or re-sign originals? Is it acceptable to read a book you're thinking about buying? Can you negotiate with art, etc.? Can you guys do a podcast on the do's, don'ts, and need to know things for those who are starting out going to cons or little gems of knowledge for those who have been going for a while? Thanks for all your hard work you put into the talks, LVG. So we'll have to do a podcast on what to do when you're going to a con.
Let's do that next week.
All right, done
Sounds
and done.
Sounds great.
Well, you know, I did write a blog post about this already, but I'm happy to go over it in a podcast form. But if you can't wait for next week, and you can take a look at our website. What is our website there, Mikey?
TheLongBoxGuys.com.
Or OutsideTheLongBox.com. Pick your poison.
Yeah, if you take a look at our blog post, I do have a little page saying the do's and don'ts and the how to enjoy a con. And we'll go over all that next week because that's pretty hard stuff. The first time I went to a con, I was kind of clueless. I could have had more fun had I known a couple of the simple things you can do to have fun at a con, and now I know them pretty well. I guess that brings us over to our last segment, which is our plugs. Mikey, do you have anything to plug?
I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our Geek Rock music. You can check him out at KirbyCrackleMusic.com. We should also plug our dodgeball team. That's right, Cat 5 is the official dodgeball team of the Long Box guys. They are going to be competing at a dodgeball tournament this month and Boston University, right, LT?
Yes, at Boston University, they are going to be competing on August 18th through the 21st at the Boston University Rec Center. That's right. They're going to be locked in at the rec center from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. It is open to the public. So come on down and watch our team compete in the Nationals.
We are going to get them so drunk.
Hopefully after they win. Hopefully. If not, we'll be drowning their sorrows.
I would also like to remind people we did sponsor a hole at a charity golf tournament. It was a benefit to help police officer Krantz, who is fighting cancer right now, and to help his family defray the cost of all the expensive treatment he's going through. If you would like to make a donation, please go over to the policebenevolentfoundation.org and make a donation in the name of Lawrence Krantz.
I would like to plug IanLino.com.
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 IanLino.com. Purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things. IanLino.com. Makers of Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, stained glass prints, t-shirts, and other great geeky items.
Well, I'd like to just quickly shout out to our own website at the Long Box Guys. Our Twitter page. We talked about a couple of things this week, including our new podcast. And we're going to be having some pictures of us drinking milkshakes up soon. Everyone go drink a milkshake tomorrow and send me a pic. And while we're at it, I think next week a lot of people will be in town for the Boston Comic Con. Stop by my restaurant, Veggie Galaxy. We make delicious vegan milkshakes. If you're a vegan and you want a milkshake, come to me, Veggie Galaxy in Cambridge.
I will plug Epic Nerd Camp. There is, at the time of this recording, 1 week, 4 days, 18 hours, 44 minutes, and 52 seconds. Tickets are still available for both sessions, August 12th to the 16th and 16th to the 20th, in lovely Starooka, Pennsylvania. I don't know if it's lovely. I've never been there.
You should also check out geekorthodox.com if you're looking for fine stained glass geeky prints. The website's up, by the way.
Yeah, I was just looking.
Not only are you going to be able to buy incredible artwork from Ian Lino, but you get to see Ian, his wife, and their dog. All three are very cute.
Well, one of them is really, really cute, and the other two are okay.
I love me, Ian. Wait, what are we talking about?
I thought we were talking about the dog.
Oh, I haven't seen
I was
the
talking
dog.
About the dog. I don't know about you guys. That's my cute dog. That's all I'm saying.
His name is Magic. He's a French bulldog.
Oh, puppies.
I believe. I guess that'll do it for us this week, guys. From all of us here at the Long Box Guys, we want to thank you for listening in. Josh, I'm on the internet and I'm seeing just a lot of crazy stuff. Is the internet your sector?
The internet is most definitely not my sector.
Because there's some terrible things I need cleaning up. Even just Googling Thor's goat, I got some stuff I really wish I could unsee.
What did you do to Thor's goat?
I Googled Thor's goat. I didn't mean to. I just wanted to see goat pictures, and I'm in hell. Oh my god, this is awful. Mike, what is this podcast like for you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comic books.
And LT, any last parting words of wisdom for us?
No matter how many times the GOP tries to repeal this podcast, we are still here.
And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live a lot longer. So long for Long Box, guys.
We melt the highway miles away like sunfire. No stopping tonight. We'll
name is Tom, and I am one of the Long Box guys. And with me, as always, is my good friends, Josh. How you doing, and what are you drinking?
Hey, can we start that over without you rocking back and forth in your chair?
I sat up while I was saying that, and I heard it, okay? Hold on. Hold on. Is there a to stop this thing from squeaking?
Look, I don't give a shit about how bad your day has been. You put your A game on when you come to this podcast.
Sir, yes, sir.